please tell me that's working. Yes, it is. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode, I've lost track. Episode 44 of the Rocket Punch Show. I'm one of your hosts, Cameron here, the man behind the console here at Rocket Punch. Of course, always with me here is the Dark Lord of Hype himself, Seth, a.k.a. Darth Turner. Seth. I have to go back and watch the video. See, I see you moving out of the corner of my eye, but... No, I think that's like normal stuff that kids do nowadays. I don't know. Oh, that's right. And they do... What's the... Flossing. Do they still floss? Do the kids floss? I don't remember. Oh, boy. I don't even remember that. Well, we're going to talk about some cringe material, I think, later on in the show, as well as some good stuff as well. But before we get to the show and all that stuff, of course, let's check in. I mean, we're here now. You have power. I don't have pressing work stuff to do. That, what is that, one so far? Where... Desert power. Okay, one. Okay, I'm 100% going to have a marker. So there's one. Okay. But other than the desert power, how's everything on your end, good sir? Mm-hmm. Whoa, okay. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. A Scarif. Okay. The test. Oh, God, I don't... It's been a while since I've seen the movie. I don't know. It hasn't been too bad. This is like the week break that I get in between work projects here, and then work's going to pick back up, of course, this upcoming week, so I have a little bit of a reprieve. And I get to spend the last little bit of it here on the show. Here's the deal. Football is coming, Seth. It is... Damn it, no! American football. The one where you hit people and then get CTE. And then be just kind of take your millions and go hide somewhere. Ooh, man, I went pretty far there. But... No, football's here. I'm super excited about it as a big football fan. Been watching a lot of the training and preseason stuff. We already started two fantasy football leagues at work. One's the main work one, and then one is with like family and friends that we're bringing in as well. And then I've been playing through some Madden 21, especially like since like I've football season has started, and I've gotten just my feelings about Madden and EA Sports and the way they handle their sports properties from a like monetary standpoint frustrates me somewhat. And I just, you know, I decided in order to take that, release myself from that, just play Madden 21. because sure, that's it. And I've been playing a little bit of that and been having some fun with it. Actually, I've been having fun with that, but I've also been committed, Seth. We might have to get an update on it for both of us here. Committed to Skyward Sword. I want to beat it very much. I just finished the Cistern. Where are you at? Oh, you've are. Well, 100%. Damn it. That's what. Of course. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. Okay. Yes, he's been talking quietly the whole time.
Oh, have I been muted?
Nope. There you go. That's why. Talk now.
Have I been? Was I muted?
You were.
Did you
muted.
Try to silence me? Did you try to silence me? All right. TLDR, let me catch you up, everyone. Since I was muted because Cameron's trying to silence me because he knows I've had a margarita, so a potent margarita at that. So I'm gonna catch you up. Tonight's goal: we're getting as many Dune references as possible.
Yep.
Cameron has told me they have to be organic. I'm already up to two. I didn't count this one, but I'm counting it now. The first one was, you said we have power. I said desert power.
Okay.
That's a Dune reference. Then we were talking about Star Wars Rogue One, and I said desert planet, Dune, Arrakis, desert planet. It counts.
Okay.
Two.
Begrudgingly, I put it on the board.
And you can give me a half point. If you really hate me, you can give me a half point.
I don't feel like doing half points. I don't feel like going with that.
We were talking about Skyward Sword. Cameron was talking about how he's not a true fan and is still playing the game and hasn't beat it yet. I'm talking about how I got all the heart pieces, beat that game, moved on to Breath of the Wild, and then I was talking about the Star Wars fan film called Fanboys. There's a quote where they're like, even if, you know, Star Wars is like pizza, even if it's bad, it's still pizza. And I was saying Zelda's the same way. So, like, even though Skyward Sword is probably my least favorite of the, like, 3D Zeldas,
mm-hmm.
Ocarina to Skyward Sword era, it's probably my least favorite of them. Still really dang good. Really dang good. Okay. So.
Well, I'm excited. I've been intrigued by the story so far. I just have to finish it. I just have to finish it. I've got a couple more dungeons left, and then I'll be done with it. And I'll.
You said you were on the Cistern?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember what that is. That game is weird. That's the structure of that game is very weird.
The ancient cistern behind the waterfall.
Oh yeah. Okay, I know where you are.
I just beat.
You actually got a little ways to go.
Oh yeah, no. I know my work is still cut out for me, but I'm still trudging along there, and I get to work in Madden 21 games in between that. So there you go.
Are you doing Ultimate Team games?
No, I don't. I set up a franchise. I've been rolling through franchise mode. I've been doing that, and then I did an exhibition match last night and replayed the Super Bowl 55. And beat the Kansas City Chiefs 99-21. It was gross. It was horribly gross, which anybody who's plays football understands that there's no way possibly in hell that you would ever get a score that, like, the team would just not play. They would just, like, hike and just stand there as you throw the ball across. It'd be ridiculous. But I digress.
Cameron, we have some gross things to talk about tonight. That's for sure.
We do. We do. Man, it's good. I love the segues. We have a bunch of stuff to talk about, guys. We're finally going to talk about this whole Blizzard lawsuit crap and our thoughts and opinions and conversations on it. We're going to talk about our thoughts on the Halo Infinite technical preview for multiplayer, even though we didn't get to play it because Xbox isn't like us. And we're also going to talk about game delays and why they're the best, maybe. We'll see. I don't know. All that stuff we're going to talk about and a whole lot more, guys, because this is the Rocket Punch Show, your southern source for gaming geek. Your southern source for all things gaming geek and more. You can listen to the show every Tuesday on your podcast service of choice. You can also listen to us live as we record the show each and every Sunday at 7:30 p.m. Central Standard Time right here on twitch.tv/RocketPunchLive. Give a special shout out to everybody watching us over on Twitch. Thank you so much for tuning in. And of course, guys, if you want to know all the content and stuff that I'm making for you and working on for you, make sure you head over to RocketPunchGo.com. That is your one-stop shop for all the videos, podcast streams, and more that are created right here at Rocket Punch. Hopefully, you're listening, you're watching, you're having a great time, enjoying yourself, enjoying the conversations. You want to help support the show. There are a bunch of ways you can do that, but I will talk about those a little bit later in the show. But before we get rolling, of course, guys, giving you guys a quick update because I did mention it last month. It is August. Right now, currently, I've got plans to kick some streaming up and do some video content up on Rocket Punch, kicking that both of those things back up starting August 30th, that week of August 30th. The 30th is the Monday. So starting that week, I should have some streams through the week, as well as some video content up for you guys to check out over on youtube.com/RocketPunchGo. So make sure you're tuned in to check all of that out. That's it. That's all the announcements I had. We're ready to jump in this year, and I'm going to throw Seth off because we're not going to go down in order. I don't want us getting salty right off the gate here.
Panic.
Yeah. So first, let's I'm going to see if this works. And then second, we're going to talk about Halo.
Okay.
Of course it doesn't work. I can't show any of the video.
It's not
things don't work, so I get to stare at the video while we talk about this. So Halo Infinite, the multiplayer, it wasn't called a technical preview. It was like the test flight or something like that.
Yeah, a technical test, whatever.
Yeah, it happened over this weekend. I think they're still doing it for like the next weekend or two. I might be wrong in assuming that. Mm. But that has come through. And I'll be honest, like, I'm not surprised, but I felt good to hear everybody, at least all the previews and stuff that I've watched, they have had nothing but great things to talk about with the multiplayer in this game. And I wanted to give some of our thoughts on some of the previews and information that we've seen, Seth, and because, of course, you know, apparently our invitations got lost in that mail somewhere, and we didn't get invites to the test flight here, which is a crying shame because how are we going to, you know, give our impressions and let them know how good the game is if they don't let us play it. But I digress. We're watching some of the video here and some of the gameplay in the map. Seth, what have you heard or learned about the test flight? Has it got you more hyped for Halo Infinite than maybe you were before?
I wouldn't say it's gotten me more hyped. I think the technical test, this is the first time people are actually getting to put hands on Halo Infinite, right? Like, there's been no E3, there's been no press coverage, like, really hasn't even really been talked about that much at, like, formal Xbox events, right? They showed a little bit of the multiplayer at their not E3 press event this year, but, like, this is the first chance we're really getting hands-on with Halo.
Yes.
I think they were very smart about the way they did it, although I wish I would have been in that technical test. I do think that keeping it kind of small, focusing on stability, you know, doing bot matches was a really smart move versus letting people go PvP from the very beginning. And even though they did eventually turn on PvP, so, like, that's kind of a moot point. But I think personally, the consensus is that it's really good Halo. Like, it's more Halo. And
Halo's back. That's
kind of what we need. Like, the recipe for success for Halo isn't super complicated, I don't think.
Really?
There's okay. a lot of... I don't think... There's a lot of people that are like, they need a battle royale. They need this. And I'm like, no, you just need to like make a really solid Halo game. Halo is its own look and feel. And mm-hmm. I think that 343 has kind of carved out their own path for what they want Halo to look and feel like. It's not a complete departure from OG, you know, Bungie style Halo, but it is almost like a evolution of that.
Mm-hmm.
Watching streams, watching people play it, talking to my friends who have been playing it, this seems to be a good continuation of that 343 vision.
Okay.
I love some of the changes. The guns, a lot more viability and a lot different types of guns. It's no longer just a sprint for one power weapon, right? It's no longer
which
like,
is good. Oh, that's you know
yeah.
You got to make sure that like. It's boring when it's like, oh no, this is the only good weapon. You need to make sure you get this before you get started. You like that flexibility to be like, maybe I suck at sniper rifles, which I do, and I don't want to play in a match and try and race for the sniper rifle. I want the shotgun, which I'm very good at in Halo. Let me tell you. I digress, sir. You're hitting on the
point. Oh no, you're good. So I think they're really starting to figure out that arena combat style, and most importantly, I think that. Like I said earlier, the recipe for success is very simple. You could have said, we're making Halo multiplayer, free-to-play, on PC and Xbox. That right there is going to make it a line item. That's going to make it a thing that people talk about. Because Halo has this huge following. It's, you know, I was listening to an interview with Phil Spencer a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about, like, I think it was the IGN interview with Ryan McCaffrey. And, like, I love Ryan to death. But man, sometimes he asks some of those real cringy journalist questions, right? The ones that they're just trying to kind of like get a headline out of a person, right?
He's got to do it. He's a journalist.
He's got to do it. And so he asks like basically very like fancy version of like, what if this game is bad, right? Like, what if fans don't like this game? And Phil like very matter-of-factly said, even if this game flops, like, Halo's still going to be our biggest franchise. People are still going to show up for it. Like, yes, people...
He's not wrong. He's not.
You don't think that people won't show up after a company misses after misses after misses? Nintendo Switch. That's all I... Like, people show up once something good comes out. But you kind of get as many tries as you need to when you're as big as something like Halo, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... I think that Halo Infinite's multiplayer is going to explode in popularity. It's going to be the most popular Halo ever. Just because it's free to play, it's going to be open. Me personally, Cameron, I'm going to get real meta for a second. Ooh. So
I like you know, it. I like it. Go
I got, ahead. I got a little drink in me. So I'm going to go a little unfiltered here. Radar is for babies. All right. Halo Radar has always been for babies. It's a baby monitor. That's what it is. It's for babies to look at and monitor because they are not able to perceive the world around them. So they put the little radar in there so that when somebody moves or exists around you, you get a little ping. So maybe you can not die to them. And it's always really frustrated me because I think a lot of the fun of shooters comes from surprising people, like getting that epic, you know, surprise shot or whatever. So one of my favorite changes they've made is that radar is no longer triggered unless you shoot or sprint. Those two actions
really
trigger radar.
Now that
if
I had
just
heard.
Moving regularly, it does not trigger it, and I think that is really cool for people who like. Let's say you get the sword. The sword has always been like very situational. If you can get the sword in the right area of the map. You can dominate with it, but if you get the sword in the wrong spot on the map, it's pretty easy for people to just kill you because they can track you on radar, right? So I like that personal change. I can't wait to play the game to kind of see how it affects the long term of thing. You know, my ability to like sneak up and do those kinds of crazy things.
Yeah. But
personally, I can't wait.
Yeah.
You asked, has this changed my hype level? Not really, because I was already really hyped for this. Okay. It just makes me want to get in and try it out. So. Did you watch any streams? Did you see any of it?
I did.
Interested to hear your thoughts.
Like I'm watching. Unfortunately, I can't show it to everybody because of some of the technical issues we've got for video, showing some of the video I'm watching. But IGN has a video up just basically showcasing a gameplay in every map that was available during the test flight. And I'm watching that right now. And I, 100%, I didn't, not saying that I haven't been hyped for it, but I didn't want to or need to like watch more video of the game. If I'd gotten into the test flight, sure, I would have been like, cool, okay, let's do it, let's play. You know, and but I'll be honest, I would have tinkered it for a little bit, played and said, okay, this, you know, this is Halo, this is what I'm excited, let me go, I'll put the controller down and then I'm done. Because it's Halo. Especially from a multiplayer standpoint, Halo multiplayer has always been awesome. I've always loved it, have way too many memories. Like, you talk about the sword, God help my... enemies when I played with swords and shotguns. It's gross. But it, just having fun with the Halo multiplayer. Now, like, even watching it now, I'm like, yep, this is, I'm enjoying every little bit of what I'm watching. Like, it's, I'm glad to see, if anything, that everybody else, especially a lot of maybe possible pundits out there who were being critical of 343 and the Halo franchise, and, you know, just whether that is true or not, or whether they deserve it, I don't know, it's up to you to decide. But like, being, I'm happy to see the success that 343 is seeing in the positive feedback that people are giving the game, telling them this is what I'm liking, I'm enjoying this. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time that Halo as a brand has ever had like a technical beta to this scale. And honestly, I'm sure part of that is probably because of the issues that came through with the Master Chief Collection. Let's not beat around the bush there. And it's very good. It's something to gauge and see how their server load's going to go, although it's, you know, 100% not going to be representative of real-world performance, especially with a portion of this game that's going to be free to play. But
yeah,
the way in which it plays and handles, to give people a taste of that, and also to get valuable data from these people, is what this main thing is all about. And this is really shown just from all the feedback and stuff that I've seen from everybody online. Like, I've seen nothing but positive stuff about this game, and just continues. It, you know, does it make me more hyped? No, not saying that I was like super hyped before. I'm hyped and excited to play Halo, but this doesn't move the needle at all for me, because I know what I'm expecting. I know Phil, I know Xbox, I know 343, they know that they have the Halo franchise. And I know that they know they cannot, pardon French, fuck this up. Like, point blank. And so I'm not, there's a part of me that's not concerned. I'm just like, I'll just wait, you know, I'm waiting until, you know, some open beta or the game comes out. Because I know the game's going to be fun. I have always said on the show that, especially with first-person shooters, one of the big things I play on there is the single-player campaign. So I'm more, very much more interested in playing the single-player campaign and seeing how the story pans out. But 343 and really the Halo franchise as a whole has always nailed like the things that I want from a single-player campaign. Now, whether the story's good or not, you know, it's here or there. Still stand by on the hill to the day I die that Halo 4 is the best single-player campaign for any Halo game. Any mainline Halo game. We'll have a discussion maybe one day when we do all the Halo games, but mainline Halo games. Let me specify my words there. But I don't know. I'm excited. I'm just happy to see people be excited about Halo. It's always, especially for people around our age, Seth, it's always had this like strong nostalgia. We remember when we were playing Halo 2 multiplayer and had the crazy maps and, you know, swords and shotguns or King of the Hill or Oddball and all these game modes that, I don't know, I feel this is the start of Halo coming back, Halo multiplayer coming back. That we really haven't felt, you know, Halo 5 had great multiplayer. People love the multiplayer, but I felt like it just kind of came and went because of some of the other issues that people had with the single player campaign and then eventually the Master Chief Collection and all the issues that came with that. And people just kind of like, Call of Duty.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to see Halo come back.
Yeah, it's going to be good. I can't wait to get our hands on Infinite. And I think this year in particular will be a really good year for non-Call of Duty shooters to maybe get a foot in the door. For
look, it's easy to get a foot in the door. They got to hold the door open.
We've been over this, but like the game is completely different for Halo now because it is a free-to-play game, right? So it has built-in longevity right there, right? Mm-hmm. Like the fact that you can play. You don't know why Warzone is so popular? It's because it's free Call of Duty. Like, that's why Warzone is so popular. Like, yes, they continuously update it, but it looks, feels, plays, smells, tastes like Call of Duty, and it's free. Like, that's why people play it so much. And the fact that they are now going to bring Halo into that fold where you can, without paying a dime, without being Game Pass Ultimate Subscriber, all that stuff, you can play Halo for free. That's a pretty big deal, and that's going to bring in millions of players.
The other big thing as well is you couple that with the fact that it's coming out simultaneously on PC,
yep,
which is the largest gaming market out of everything. So once again, I think this is the first Halo game launching day and date with PC, and so combining that together, like I said, I think I had a prediction. I'll have to go back into my show notes and find it, but like, Halo Infinite's going to be one of the biggest launches.
Yep.
In this year. Full stop.
See how it goes.
Still stand by that. 100%.
We'll see how it goes.
100% will.
It's going to be, to me, it's the kind of the bright start to Xbox Series X generation, right? Like, we've got some kind of precursors leading up to it, some great Game Pass winners, Psychonauts 2 coming soon. But like, for me, Halo Infinite is the kickoff of this generation's big exclusive, you know, technical powerhouse games. I guess that's the best way to put it. So,
okay,
we'll see. We'll see.
100%
let me in. Let me in. Let me in.
Maybe what? When are they having their next technical test? Let me see.
Shake your fantasy eight ball and tell me, like, the magic eight ball and let me Outlook Grim.
Let's see. Last Flight, previous, how to play Windows Central. Of course, has all the information on this, where the dates, when did the start, date, time, Last Flight, Next Flight. We anticipate the next Halo Infinite beta will begin at some point during the end of August to early September. So definitely, if you're interested and you want to sign up to get a chance to play in the test flights, if you actually go over to Windows Central and Google Halo Infinite beta, they have all the information you're ever going to want. Yeah. Actually, for all the people tuning in via Twitch, I'll go ahead and throw it up in the Twitch chat right now. Ah, there you go. If Rurutu in chat says, if Halo bombs, Microsoft will announce they're buying Disney to distract the media. Good luck. Good luck trying that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, apparently you've destroyed our targeting computer. I have no idea where we're going now, so I'm gonna let you tell me where we're going next.
Yes, I will tell you where we're going next. But before I do that, let me tell you guys out there listening and watching how you can help support the show. Got videos and streams and a bunch of other stuff coming up. It's like the dragons in Game of Thrones, guys. They're coming. I promise. This has been my somewhat slight sabbatical from that, so I can get everything squared away and get my setup and everything taken care of. But if you're enjoying the show, enjoying the content, there are a lot of different ways you can support the show. Of course, the free and easy way to do so is to support us by reviewing our show over on your audio service of choice. If you're listening via Apple iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, wherever, take some time, throw us a review, let us know how we're doing, so that way we can continue making awesome content for you. You can also follow us on social media. I am at Rocket Punch Go. That man over there, Seth, is at Darth Turner over on Twitter. You can go find us there, follow our content. You'll find out when stuff's going live, as well as any other random stuff that's happening in our lives there. But if you do want to go one step even further, go plus ultra, go even further beyond. You can do so by becoming using your Twitch Prime sub to subscribe to us right here on twitch.tv/RocketPunchLive. Help support the show. Get some awesome emotes in the process. You can also consider being a Patreon member over at patreon.com/RocketPunch. For as little as $1 a month, you can help support the show. Keep the light, the one light with some spider web attached. The one light and all this stuff rolling and running smoothly here at with myself here at Rocket Punch. Want to give a special shout out to our Rocket Punch producers, the guys supporting us at our highest tier. We want to thank you so much there. Thank you to Jossie M, Julian P, Steven S, and of course all of our Twitch Prime subs there. We thank you so much for helping support us on Patreon. But if you want to get access, again, guys, to cool, exclusive content, head over to Patreon. $1 a month will get you back behind-the-scenes stuff, extra bonus content, which I have plans for. Seth just doesn't know it yet. And a whole lot more. But if you don't want to do that or can't do that, guys, it's very easy. You can still listen to the shows and watch the content and streams all for free and just help support us over on social media or giving us that review. Really helps us out. Seth, we're saving the big stuff for last. Is my thing still broke? Let me see. No, it works.
Yes.
God, I don't know what the hell's going on, but I can pseudo have B-roll footage in the background. So, for people who don't know, a tear was shed the last week or two because Horizon Forbidden West is not coming out in 2022. It's actually getting delayed not coming out in 2021. It's getting delayed to the first quarter in 2022, which, I mean, it did well for the first game when it came out in March 2022. Some of the stuff there. And it really got me thinking, not so much about like, you know, oh, let's have a conversation about Horizon Forbidden West, because I could talk about this game and the Horizon franchise for days. But I wanted to talk about game delays. I think it's a conversation, Seth, we really haven't had on the show, mm-hmm. because not only was Horizon Forbidden West delayed to first quarter 2022, but Kena, Bridge of Spirits, game I'm super excited for, or at least I was super excited for this month, got a little bit of a delay as well. They needed additional time to polish the game, and so it got pushed over to September 2021. And that really got me thinking, let's talk about game delays and how they're the best. Maybe, I don't know, we'll see. I guess we have to have a discussion here. I wanted to talk, Seth, like, what do we think about game delays? We always hear, everybody talks, we hear, oh, game got delayed, then somebody always has to work in that Miyamoto quote, you know, a delayed game is great forever, blah, 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 blah. But I really wanted to talk about game delays, how we feel about them, really and truly. And then how kind of our thoughts on just how game delays were back then versus they are now. And then really discuss, does a delay always help? And in some cases, is it even in the best interest? Because I think there have been a couple of times where it may not have been in the best interest to delay a game for a myriad of reasons. But Seth, as always, we kick off with you. What are your thoughts? What do you think about game delays as far as your feelings on them?
I mean, this is a big one to try and tackle. Like, what do I feel about game delays? Like, I think game delays are the perfect blend of disappointment and, I guess, what is the feeling that one can convey when you're like glad that someone is clairvoyant? I don't know what that is, but like, I am always happy to see that. Let me back it up.
Okay.
For those that don't know, I'm a product designer. I build digital products, not games, digital products, websites, da da da. Part of that job, and part of what I don't think the game industry talks about much, is like how digital things get made and the process and mindset that goes into making a lot of this stuff, right? And I think that if you can learn a bit about like how digital things get made and the mindset behind it, I think it really helps you start to understand and contextualize a lot of the decisions that are made. So when you think about stuff like game delays, right? A game delay is kind of a last resort. But it is also, one of those things that every developer would probably appreciate, the ability to delay your game. But there kind of comes a point where you have to like shit or get off the pot, for lack of a better term, right? Like there is a certain point where you have to send the game out. And the fact of the matter is, like, I'll put it very plainly for you, Cameron. From a business perspective, a game is ready when people are willing to pay for it and feel validated in paying for it. Like, that is when a game is ready, right? And so you have different people approaching game releases very differently. Steam does an early access approach, right? Like, they allow you to do early access games, and I would say a large majority of their successful titles are early, you know, have early access components to them, right?
Yeah.
You have Microsoft, who's very focused on subscription-based gaming, so they're on, like, lifetime value, recurring playership, right? Sony's very focused on blockbuster AAA experiences, right? So games you're going to touch for 2 weeks and then never think about again, right? But you pay for it up front, so that's okay. You know, it works out. So these are three very different, like, consumption methodologies, right? And so when you think about, like, game delays, you have to first ask yourself, like, what even is a game delay? Like, what you're really talking about is you're talking about a game's release being delayed. I think when you look at what early access and stuff like Halo Technical Test and things like that have really done is it's helped lower the barrier of entry for game, game testing. Like, you always want to test it as much as possible. But to bring it all back, like, Cameron, all of this is COVID. Like, this is just during these unprecedented times. Like, this is just
most COVID. Most all of the game delays that have happened, honestly, over the last, like, 2 years has been COVID-related.
It is fundamentally shook the way that every single industry functions, right? It is fundamentally changing, and we are still seeing the effects of it today. Like, and we will see the effects for years to come. It is a 9/11 tier disaster emergency, probably even bigger than that, because, like, you think about everything about, like, not just like safety changed, but like the way you go to an airport, the way you get a passport, everything changed after that, right? After 9/11. And so, like, COVID is going to be another moment. Like, everything you do about work, about play, about what free time means is changed after COVID. So to think about, like, are game delays the best? I don't think they're the best. I think they suck. Like, game delays really do suck. Like, people want to play the thing now, but they are a necessary part of the game development lifecycle, especially when you look at how insanely big games are nowadays in order to push into that AAA category, right?
I'm curious. I ask your thoughts, and one of the things you brought up with game delays are, like, these technical previews and these alphas and these betas. Do you think, while it is helpful to get that data, do you think that it's been helpful as well, because that kind of, In some cases, it kind of curbs the appetite for people. Instead of part of that, like, the torture of a game delay is you want to play the game now, but you can't because now the bar keeps getting pushed back and back and back. And but then if you have, here's a alpha or here's a beta, if you pre-order the game, you get a small taste, at least a feel for it, that it's as horrible as it sounds. It's like giving a drug addict a small sample of crack. Like,
why are you going there, dude? Why are you going there?
That's the first thing my brain went to. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I personally, Cameron, I think that we are gluttons for choice at this point in age, right? Like, if you think we're kind of really far in the world of, like, all games are games as a service, right? Like, Destiny is a game you can still pick up and play. Fortnite is a game you can still pick up and play. Warzone is a game you can still pick up and play. The Sims 4 is a game you can still pick up and is currently being, you know, it's like there are so many things vying for our attention. So to answer your question very bluntly, people, if your game is good, people are going to play it. Period.
Yeah.
Minecraft, still one of the top played games in a lot of areas, because it's that damn good, right? And so the idea behind all of this, and the thing that always comes to my mind, is Knights of the Old Republic. Knights of the Old Republic is,
okay,
you want to learn about game delays and how a game delay can work out for you. Knights of the Old Republic. That game was delayed for about 2.5 years before it actually came out. Still to this day, considered one of the greatest Star Wars games ever made. Also considered one of the best BioWare RPGs ever made. Probably second to Mass Effect, right? And you think about that kind of a legacy is not worth it to, like, it is not worth to give that up in favor of shipping in a fiscal year earlier. Now, yeah, if you're a raw money man, all you care about is games on a spreadsheet. But if you're running your business that way, then, like, I don't think you're really set up to succeed. That's how EA ran their business for a really long time, and it blew up in their face a lot, right? Star Wars Battlefront 2. That was a game made on the spreadsheets, right? That was not a game made for the fans. It was made to generate income. And it single-handedly, like, crushed not only Star Wars as a brand for a while, like Star Wars games as a brand, it also crushed loot boxes as a concept. Like, it kind of ended the parade, right?
Yeah,
like,
it did.
So
100%.
So I would always rather have somebody take the time they need to get it done. It still sucks. Like, it is okay to say it sucks when a game gets delayed and you're bummed about it. I will personally say I am very bummed about this year in particular, because so many games have been pushed out of this year. And I do feel like there are some of those games that are getting pushed out for no reason other than they want to feel better about it. And to be honest, I do think that some of the new console hype is a component to all of this. Like, the fact that new consoles are not readily available. Like, why are you rushing out Horizon? Well, that's a bad example, because that comes out on PlayStation. But, like, why would you rush out games for, like, new consoles when you're still having trouble getting new consoles in everyone's hands, right? Because the idea, traditionally, behind launching a game is to sell as many units of that game, and if you're a first party, to sell as many consoles. You know, you want to attach consoles to it, right?
That's the same with, like, selling consoles, that stuff too. And, like, if, especially when you get a lot of these bigger games that can, or console sellers, you want getting those. If a game is not considered as such, that's when, of course, as we always see, is you start seeing games that, oh, this game is also coming on the previous generation of consoles, because in those console shifts and generations, the big thing is about generating revenue, getting people to jump on the new hardware as soon as possible, so that they can continue drawing revenue. Because once you have your console for 5, 7, 10 years, there comes a point when, like, okay, I've bought all the games and all the accessories and all the small stuff that I need for my console. I got my 4 controllers, I got my different cables, I got my 2 types of headsets, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And now it's time to re-up. Let's go. But it's... I'm... I'll let you finish, and then I'll share my thoughts on
gameplay. Yeah. And so, like, the things you've cited so far, and the reason I brought this up to begin with, is I think that game delays look very different for depending on the way you run your business, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you brought up 2 examples that are Sony specific, right? Kena and Horizon. Horizon's the first party. Kena's like a second party kind of exclusive.
And And those are just, at least from the last week or so that I know of, literally games are getting delayed every week.
Yeah. But I think the bar for those games are different than what Halo went through, right? Halo was a game that was on track to release. It was ready to go by the due date. The fans were not a fan of the way it looked, so they moved the goalpost, right? That wasn't because the game was technically broken. It was just because it didn't show well. It didn't look good. It didn't meet people's expectations, right? Versus with Sony and Nintendo are, you know, they're hardware manufacturers. They want to sell consoles, right? And so if I were a money man, right, and I see PlayStation 5s are flying off the shelves, why am I going to, like, launch a salvo that is Horizon when the idea behind launching a big game is you want to push console sales? But I can't even push console sales because console sales are maxed out right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I from the moment they showed those dates, I said, there's no way. God of War for sure was not coming out this year. I laughed when they dropped 2021 in that initial trailer. And it didn't surprise me when Horizon got pushed because, do you think, Cameron, that in the year 2021, the demand for PlayStation 5 is going to dwane at all?
It's going to dwindle?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely
not.
Console, so yeah.
If you are on the Mario Kart track, you don't need a boost when you're at top speed, right? You need a boost when you need a boost.
God, that is great. That is great. Yes.
So,
yes.
From Sony's perspective, I think those games are probably pretty damn close to being ready. I don't think there's probably a lot that needed to be delayed, but every developer is going to want more time to polish. And you look at the books and you're like, honestly, this thing's going to perform better once we have more consoles out there. And we're going to make more money once we can have more consoles on shelves for people to buy to play with it, right? So yeah. That makes sense. The Halo situation, totally different, right? That Microsoft doesn't make a penny more.
I don't know, and it's not to open a discussion on Halo, but I feel like if Halo was ready to go and they delayed Halo because of community feedback after the showing in August, mm-hmm. I don't think it would have been a year. My honest opinion.
The fact that they delayed it and then sacked the creative director and most of the senior staff, Halo has gone through some stuff.
I think more so, at least, like, and I agree that I think it's a different approach. Like you said, like, various game delays are different, but I think one of the main reasons Halo Infinite got delayed was because of past-ish, like, we talked about in the multiplayer discussion, the fact that Halo needs a win. They cannot fuck this up. They have to win, and if that means that they need to delay the game 3, 6, 9 months, a year, they need to let the creative director go and make some adjustments in the 11th hour, then they need to do that. Xbox has that flexibility, Microsoft, because they have Microsoft backing them, and Microsoft has that flexibility that if they push it a year, we're going to make sure we do this right. We're going to lose X amount of millions of dollars in advertising, and people aren't going to buy our console as much. They can handle that. If Phil's sitting there going, we can stem the tide. It's the same thing they did when, I think, the 360 and their whole Red Ring of Death scenario in a similar vein where Steve Ballmer just said, do it. We're going to lose $1 billion. Don't care. Fix it. Fix the brand. We're going to make sure the brand works because the brand is more important than the immediate satisfaction of getting, you know, if Halo Infinite had released yet last year, they would have had so many new Xbox Game Pass Ultimate subscribers. They would have had so many sales of the new Halo game. It would have been crazy. It probably, you know, you would have gotten one of those press releases where it's like one of the biggest and best Halo releases of all time. But, like you said, like you talked about with the PlayStation, with the Xbox, the excitement on getting an Xbox system has not dwindled, so why rush it? You have the time. I think gamers are educated enough now in the, as we've gotten older, that we understand, you know, you'll have some cool games to start off with, but you need to let developers have time with these systems so that they can fully utilize the power that these things have. Let's take another year. Let's roll it out. Let's take a year. Let's polish it. Let's really focus on making this the true Halo experience that Halo fans and everybody else is wanting, et cetera, et cetera. Boom, here we are. Small rant, but go.
I agree with you. And I think that people, gamers in particular, are becoming more wary of this, like, game comes out, isn't really great, gets fixed later on, right? That's one way that your game release can go, right? They could have released Halo last year. Summer, they could have been like, we've got the big Halo Infinite 2.0 update. We're fixing the graphics. We're doing this. We're changing this new campaign. You know, like, you can do that, but time has kind of shown us time and time again that first, you can't change your first impression, right? And that's where I think the game delay, the hesitation to release your game too early has come. When early access first came around, it was super exciting because you're able to, like, it's a dream for game developers because game developers want to make games that people want to buy. So if they can get you to buy it while they're building it, they can just build it to spec. Right? They just build whatever the community tells them to build.
And it's like, you talk about first impressions are always important. No Man's Sky. And it's not so much, we've talked about ad nauseum on the show about No Man's Sky and their awesome redemption story. But think about the work. I feel like Sean Murray and Hello Games probably worked harder getting No Man's Sky to where it is now than they did leading up to launch.
Yeah.
Because of that, if they had just taken the time and said, it's not ready yet. We need another year. And on that flip side, it's hard, you know, they're an indie studio. It's hard for them to do that. So I kind of get that, but at the same time, it kind of bit them in the ass. And they had to probably take some money and probably take a little bit of a financial hit.
Yeah.
To get the game where it should have been at launch.
Yeah, and No Man's Sky is a fringe example. And it is an example, I think, of why Sony is very protective of the way they do business, because I don't think I've ever said this. This is a hot take, but here we are, Cameron. You ready for another one? If No Man's Sky had launched on Steam, Hello Games would have gone bankrupt because everyone would have refunded the game and never thought about it again. The reason Hello Games has been able to go heads down for 3 years and focus on it is because they made millions and millions and millions of dollars after Sony hyped it up and made it the best thing. And they pre-sold millions and millions and millions of copies to people who thought it was going to be the best thing since sliced bread. And then it came out and it wasn't. And since then, they've been updating it off that initial funding, right? They got all that money up front because you can't return PS5 or PS4 games. You couldn't return games at the time, right? Still can't to this day. Hey, man,
that's a conversation we should have one day. Like,
it's like if that game had come out on Steam, the Hello Games would have ceased to exist within 6 months. Sean Murray would have had to go under and probably file bankruptcy because the cost of building the game would have been, you know, like they were banking on growth.
Rutu in chat asks, didn't they win best ongoing game last year? It was either last year or the year before, but yes, because it was great. Sean Murray was on screen drinking like a beer, and they call his name. And he's like, "Oh shit, we won!"
and that's like a very privileged position to be in, because most games, if they don't get it from the start, they fail. Like the redemption story is very few and far between, and the only way you're really able to pull it off is if you burn cold hard cash to get it there, right?
Yeah.
And you were right; they took a financial hit. They were burning raw money. But they had so much money up front that they were able to do that.
Well, take a breath. I want to get some words in here, and especially some of the questions, because some great conversations in chat here on Twitch. Rurutu in chat says, I think it's much better to delay games these days than release a Cyberpunk. Gamers aren't lacking content these days. Too many retro games and new AAA games of great quality. We don't have time to play them all. And I think, especially in talking about game delays, back in my day, kids, let me tell you something. We had game delays and we were upset. We were mad because we didn't have anything to play for like 3 or 6 months. And I think that's one of the big things and big changes. And, you know, any of the old timers, I say old timers, but anyone around my age, and Seth, even both of our ages there, go back when we were kids and when, you know, let's be truly honest, gaming was not as popular as it is now. If you were in middle school and you were a gamer, you were getting thrown in a locker somewhere or shunned by the popular kids. And it's an extreme example, but I digress. The point is that, like, back then, we were not getting games in the volume that we are getting them now. The gaming industry as a whole was still young. Technically, we are still relatively young compared to other forms of entertainment. But we back then, a game got delayed, and it could be like you were basically hoping and praying that you could play, you know, pick up Mario Kart on the N64 and play through that over and over again, just playing through courses and whatnot to entertain yourself, or play through Pokemon and catch them all. But now, Rurutu, I 100% agree with you in chat. Like, now we're at this point where we have not only games... actually, it's funny we mentioned Final Fantasy XIV in chat. Games like MMOs that have almost this entire open world and play with your friends and all these quests and run dungeons. But also with indies and AAA games and then all the games in between, we are, my honest opinion, we are inundated with games. Inundated with games and opportunities. Ask any gamer nowadays, show me your backlog. They're going to roll out a scroll that falls to the floor and rolls about 5 feet down the street. And it's like the big thing, and I think why I remember impressions on like game delays back then were like, oh my God, another game delay. Jesus Christ, get your shit together. To like, oh, okay, Horizon get delayed. Yeah, no big deal. I got shit to play. Yeah, I'm still trying to beat Red Dead Redemption. I'm still trying to beat Death Stranding. I downloaded the Phantom Pain. I'm playing through that on and off. Skyward Sword is back. I'm trying to beat that. And like, there are so many other games that you can pick up. And that's not even talking about indie games that may not be the 50-hour experiences or, you know, the open world stuff that, you know, people love nowadays, but is still relevant and still are great experiences to have that are ready now while you wait for the next big thing, while you wait for Halo Infinite, while you wait for Horizon, while you wait for God of War, while you wait, you know, for those games, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why it's like saying game delays are the best. Game delays aren't the best. They're still, you know, I really wish I could be playing Kena: Bridge of Spirits this month, but I understand, okay, they need some time and to make sure they realize their vision, work out any bugs, make sure they've got a plan of attack and that they can move forward with. I understand. I work on a lot of projects that are basically in a similar time frame. Like, we have to get this done by December 31st. And inevitably, because of a myriad of reasons, I have to go to my boss and say, it's not going to be done on December 31st. We need an additional 2 weeks. We need an additional month. And it's having that conversation and sometimes having to break that to our employers and say, oh, I hate to tell you, but you know, here's why and here's that justification. I'm sure all these guys at these game studios go through the exact same thing, where you've got the software developers or the artists or somebody going up to their lead saying, look, we need more time. The code is busted. There's this game breaking bug that when you pull the trigger on your gun in Halo Infinite, it crashes the game and sends you right back to the login screen. Definitely not a bug you want going in on your game day one. And so, okay, cool. We're going to delay it a year. That'll give us enough time to, you know, or we were going to delay it 3 months, but now since this pops up, now we maybe take some more time to fix it, as well as add some other stuff that we wanted to get added in the first place. The big thing, and I guess, like, especially for, I think, the few people out there that still, because every time a game gets delayed, there's somebody that swoops in, usually some type of console warrior fanboy or just somebody who wants to stir the pot. In some form or fashion, like, your game's getting delayed, blah, 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 don't have any games, da, da, da. That's bullshit. They have games on the system. They may not be the super AAA things, but there are games in this entertainment to play on that system. And like we've been saying in chat, there are so many games to play this week that I feel really bad for the people that only focus on the AAA and only focus on these top-tier game delays, that they're not taking the time to enjoy gaming and enjoy these indie experiences, these third-party experiences, or experiences on other platforms, and purely just want to poke fun at the fact that Mario is getting delayed another year, or whatever. And it's just, it's game delays aren't bad. Game delays aren't good. Game delays are a necessary evil. They are part of the business and that we have to work with. When you want a project to be successful, sometimes it requires making those harder choices. I think the big thing for me in game delays is I think that it sucks. And I get it. It's a business. I think some people forget at the end of the day that making games is a business. And at the end of the road, somebody is there to make money off that thing. Mm-hmm. Is that sometimes a lot of game delays can be driven so much by money. Or money is somewhere in the back of their mind. And, you know, we're going to dig up old graves here to talk about game delays. Duke Nukem Eternal. Or whatever, Duke Nukem, whatever forever. The hell it was, forever. Nukem Forever. And how that game had like, oh, we're going to release it, and then just had like a complete clusterfuck of delays until it came out a decade later, and it was, guess what, it was total poo-poo garbage. And now we speak about it only in memes and jokes nowadays, in that like, or just other games wherein the main reason for pushing it out now is monetary reasons. And I'm not going to say that it's all, again, as with most things in life, it's not a clear cut yes or no. It's always a gray area. Not going to say that, you know, we take an example like Anthem. Should Anthem have been delayed more? Yes, it should have. But I don't think the fact that the EA heads up are like, look, we need to make money on this game now. Release it. Do something. We know the story behind that, so I don't necessarily fault them, because guess what? They've been giving you lax time for like 3 years, and you've basically sat there with your thumbs up your butts not doing anything or bickering back and forth over how the game should run instead of actually finding a common ground and working towards that goal. And that's really what bit Anthem in the butt. I feel bad because I saw Anthem on Game Pass, and I was like, oh, man. And I shed a tear.
Don't feel bad. Let the past die.
Kill it if you have to.
Kill it if you have to.
But I think that, like, I think that's one of the big things for me, is that I really wish game delays, at least some of them, were not solely driven by monetary reasons. Because I think that's when things get squirrely.
Yeah.
And problems start to arise.
Yeah, I don't want to drone too much on, like, I think we've kind of covered this thing, but like that, it's, I don't even think you can compare the modern landscape to the era of Anthem. Like, I don't think gaming is anywhere, looks anything like it did in 2017. And I know you're like, wait a second, that's only 4 years ago. Like
COVID amplifies that by like COVID at least twice. Moved
gaming forward at least 3 years as far as like growth of the industry, like pushing things forward. Like the PlayStation 5 is going to pass the PlayStation 2. Like it's already sold 10 million units in less than a year. It took the PlayStation 2, the most popular console of all time, a year and a half to do that. So like, you are looking at the most popular generation of gaming ever. Period. And that just means the stakes are higher. That also means that there are more people, like, even if a game is a flop, it can still be successful. In that same breath, I'll say, you can't mess up your first impression. Like, your first impression is important. But like, I'm pulling up top downloaded PS5 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Number 8, Marvel's Avengers. Highly considered one of the worst releases of last year. Sitting at number 8 somehow. Somehow people are downloading it and playing it, right?
People are ready for the War for Wakanda stuff.
And before you think that like, oh, well, you know, the new games are what's big. Nope, Fortnite's still number 1. Hunter's Arena is number 2 because it's free. Call of Duty's number 3. Oh, there's Spider-Man. The world's most popular comic book superhero is number 4.
Spider-Man. Spider-Man.
Two sports games, A Plague Tale, Avengers, and Ratchet and Clank. There's the newest Sony first party. So it doesn't even, like, the rules have changed. The rules have changed. The market is so much bigger than it has ever been. And even if you misstep, you can still bring it back. But I will say that if you don't misstep, you're a lot better off in the long run. Like, it's way easier to grow your product than it is to gain ground back to square one. So
go look at Cyberpunk.
That's all I'll say. Speaking of losing ground.
Before we get to that, a quick small PSA. Rutu has brought up in chat, please go get A Plague Tale Innocence on PC if you have Epic Game Store. It's free for like the next couple of days. Please go get it.
Good
it's
game.
Awesome game. I'm playing
through. It's on Epic Game Store. Isn't it also on PSN?
Yep, it is. It's another
game so.
That I am playing through right now to in my backlog to beat. Speaking of losing ground, it's time, Seth. I was ready to talk about this 3 weeks ago. Was ready to talk about this 2 weeks ago. I'm ready to talk about it now. Does it still work? I mean, it works. Yes, it does. So for people who are not caught up with what the hell was going on, Blizzard, huge big news back in late July, broken out by, of course, Bloomberg. I'm sure Jason Schreier had some help with this one, or helped out with this one a little bit as well. But this article here is from Maeve Alsop over at Bloomberg here, really kind of kickstarting the entire ordeal over how Activision Blizzard has gotten sued for their frat bot. They're basically getting sued by the state of California over their quote frat boy culture within the studio, in all the studios itself, from the higher ups. And it's just, I mean, Seth, I think it's safe to say that it's been really just a shit show since then. A lot of the allegations and stuff coming through there. We're not going to go through all that detail. You can go literally Google it. Polygon or IGN, somebody's got a whole site listed like the events of everything that's happened. Boom, 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 boom. We'll talk about certain key moments there and bring it up in the conversation, but I wanted to talk about this from a certain approach. Cameron, life lesson, for people who don't know about it, a lesson I learned that may help you out in your own life is that when problems, especially big ones like this, always pop up, you really think about it and look at the media. And, you know, when you're talking with your friends, everybody always focuses on the negative. And it's justly so, but I think to some extent, we always tend to focus a little too hard on the negative for too long. And here's what I mean. It's just like, it's always, oh my God, they're doing this, dot, 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 they're doing that. Did you hear about what they're doing now? Dot, 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 or did you hear about what our higher-ups and stuff were doing now? And we all want change. We want to see a positive change, or course correct the ship, whatever you want to call it. But I think it takes so long for us to stop talking about the negative and start having the conversation of how can we fix this. When you have a problem, you can dwell on the problem, but don't dwell on it forever. Don't dwell on it for a long time. You know, like, identify the problem and then say, okay, we got a problem. You know, we can feel bad about it and joke about it and do whatever we want to later, but for now, how can we fix the problem? How can we move us in the right direction to be successful, to get us where we want to be? And I feel like not only just in gaming itself, but just in life, sometimes we don't ask ourselves that question when we run into a problem. We're just so mad or frustrated or upset, like, oh my God, this, I'm never going to get out of here, as opposed to how can I get out of here? Maybe I can go path A or B or something like that. And that's what I wanted to talk about with this conversation. I want to talk about Blizzard's misconduct. I want to talk about how we can get better, Seth. How we, as a gaming community, even if it's just you and me and the ideas we have that we're talking to people that listen to the podcast and on the video, maybe it's a catalyst, maybe it's not. It's something to start. How can we? I want to sit down and talk about how we, as individuals and also as a group overall, can do better and help educate others to become better with becoming more inclusive and welcoming in the gaming industry and community. I understand this is a very broad, this could be a possibly very broad question to ask. So we're going to keep it in the realm of gaming community. But I've got a lot of thoughts. I'm sure you do too.
Some knee-jerk, given the framing that you've given, I got a little bit of a spicy take that I want
to lead with. Let's go.
I personally, if we're talking about Blizzard and what is happening at Blizzard right now, what the gaming community does or doesn't do honestly doesn't fucking matter. I can promise you that the livelihood of these developers and these people who work at Blizzard are not impacted by the shit that people say, whether it is on a comment section or in a Bloomberg article entry. Like, it doesn't fucking matter. What matters is that these people who go to work every day are going into a hostile, toxic environment and are... And this isn't like, this started last year. This shit's been going on decades. Literal decades. Since you and I were in high school, this shit has been going on. Oof. And so I'm going to get back to answer your question about what can we as gamers do to be better. I'm going to very quickly answer what can Blizzard employees and game industry employees do to make things better. And the answer is very simple, Cameron. It is unionize. Eventually, it's going to happen.
Okay.
And when it does, the thing is going to be much better. Is it going to suck? Yes. For companies, it's going to suck. Is it going to suck for some employees? Absolutely. The amount of money that they take home is going to go down. And they didn't need that union protection. So to them, it's going to be lost money because they're paying all this money to protect people that are not them, right? And so that inherently is like a negative emotion, right? But at the end of the day, if there's one constant, every time I hear about working in any entertainment medium industry, especially the big ones like Blizzard, is the rot. If there is rot, the rot is so deep that you would have to kill the whole thing to get it out. Like, it is like in the Blizzard situation, you would have to see an entire departure of the company, like the senior leadership of the company, to see them even start to fix some of these problems. But if you do that, the company goes belly up in 6 months. Like, you just can't. Like, that's not the way our country's structured. So, like, I don't want to talk too much about that because it's kind of a doom and gloom conversation.
Yeah.
I do think that the sooner games industry in particular unionizes, the better it is going to be for those workers. I think that every business known to man will fight tooth and nail, even if they say they support it, will fight tooth and nail to stop it, because that is when growth stops, is when someone comes in and starts to inhibit growth. And it's a pendulum. It's swinging back and forth, right? So shifting back to your original thing, Cameron, you were talking about, like, how can we as a games industry be better and as gaming fans be better? That's a tough one, man, because there are some people that are just inherently really bad people and they suck. And all we can do is think about the things that in your life that you can control, right? And that is your reaction, your response to things, the way you talk to people, the way you engage with things. And what you can do, sadly, if you're not working in this industry, is very little, right? Like, you can vote with your dollars, you can, you know, get into a comment section and downvote a negative comment or whatever. But inherently, it is tough. So, like, what you can do is focus on being the best you that you can be in this industry, right? Now, does that mean going into every comment section and defending people? Absolutely not. You're going to burn yourself out in a week doing that, right? Like, it's...
If that.
It's you just can't do it. There are some things you might be able to do. Sure, start a podcast like we have. Talk about it on the podcast. Maybe people listen. Maybe people don't.
I have to think about that.
That's one way to go about it. But at the end of the day, the only thing you can really do is you can control your space and your reaction to these types of things. And where you choose to put your attention, where you choose to put your comments, will dictate the industry as a whole. Like, it will dictate your reality. And so bringing it back to Blizzard, if you don't think that these people are facing negative work environment or facing a negative work environment, then I don't know what to tell you other than, like, you're not quite comprehending what's happening, because they are. It is.
No. So everything's great at Blizzard. The gaming industry and all developers are doing great. All they need to do is just shut up and code, okay? They don't always all these union issues. Just shut up.
You're right, Cameron. I forgot they have the All Voices Matter brick outside. That solved it, right?
Oh, of course it did. Of course.
Bobby Kotick just goes outside and points at that and says, what are you talking about?
They let J. Allen Bratt go because he was obviously the problem, right?
To answer the question of, like, what does Blizzard need to get better, I think J. Allen Brack was the first. I think they need to gut a majority of that senior leadership. And honestly, I think they're about to. Like, if you look at who's running Blizzard right now, Cameron, it's Mike Ybarra, who's been there for about a year and came from Xbox, and the previous person who ran Vicarious Vision. Two people have nothing to do with Blizzard. And Blizzard has always been one of those studios that has been, like, high tenure. People have been there their whole lives. Like, you would expect the next CEO of Blizzard to have been someone who's been there for like 5-10 years, right? You wouldn't expect for it to be people that came in through acquisitions or snipe hires, right? Like, it really shows you how deep this rot goes, that they can't even have someone in their own damn company run their own damn company. Okay. Yeah. That's pretty damn bad.
I want to take a second. I want to talk about it too and give my thoughts. I agree with you. Like, a lot of the time, at the end of the day, all we can do is control. We can only control what we can control. Sometimes that is just putting your money where your mouth is. And I want to tell you, Seth, it is very hard. Just on a personal note, it's so hard to see this crap happen and some of my favorite games be from that company. I love World of Warcraft, haven't been playing it in a while, but, you know, I got Final Fantasy 14. I'm good there, but, like, Overwatch. Love Overwatch. But to feel like you're at this crossroad, like, I don't like what the overarching company is doing, but the developers and the people that coded and actually built this game are busting their butt off to make something special, and I want to support them by playing the game, but then I'm just feeding back into the money and frenzy that the corporate overlords have over that game and just pushing their agenda even harder. And it's just, it's hard. You know, it's nice. Funny, we talked about this in the last topic. It's nice that nowadays we have enough games that we can keep ourselves entertained. Otherwise, we would be in a whole lot of trouble if, like, oh God, I can't play Overwatch for 6 months or whenever it's sorted out, or if it even gets sorted out. It hurts and it sucks. I think you're getting along a point as well. Like, as an African-American male who's predominantly been considered a geek or nerd, you know, nerd, whatever phrase you want to use, for most of my life, I understand that part, and I understand that sense of isolation and harassment that people get, whether, you know, on Blizzard's standpoint, apparently with women or with other minorities or people of color or any person in that subsection that, you know, we're talking about, in this gaming industry. And, like, you know, I've had conversations on here before, like, of how, man, it really feels like when I go, I remember growing up and I watched and listened to, like, gaming content, a lot of people sure looked the same. Wasn't a problem. They were all nice guys, but, you know, having that diversity, it meant something when I could see somebody who looks like me talk about a thing that I love. And so, like, how can we, you know, look at my notes here, was the question, how can we as individuals and as a group overall do better? Like, number one, be welcoming. Like, you don't. It's one of those deep topics, Seth, that I sit down and I'm driving or I'm at home and I think about, like, why are people the way they are? Why do people have such hate for things that they clearly just don't understand? And because they don't understand it, they're immediately like, don't want to know about it. But then taking the time to understand and listen to these people and listen to these stories and listening to why, because they didn't grow up on a farm out in the middle of the boonies. They grew up in an inner city suburb with barely any money and was in a homeless shelter in and out for most of their life. Or they lived in a rich, expensive mansion and they can do whatever they want to. It's just, at a minimum, like, hearing people out and understanding where they're coming from, like, this world is too vast. The things, even like from a gaming standpoint, like the games that are created are from these, you know, what's the thing that Ubisoft always says in front of their games? Like, this game has been created by a lot of multicultural, diverse group of people with various religious beliefs, something like that. You know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
Like, understanding that and working towards a common goal to, you know, make everyone feel comfortable and help everyone achieve their best level of success in the gaming industry. I don't know why harassing people and making snide or rude comments or walking into the breastfeeding room and standing there with the door open, when I'm pretty sure you clearly know that is the breastfeeding room, why that needs to be a joke or something humorous, or ha ha ha, I'm just joking, man, I was just playing. I mean, I've heard that phrase so many times in my life, not necessarily for gaming stuff, but for other stuff that revolves around that same category. If you can understand my inflection and meaning, that just got old, fucking old, after a time. And it's just, don't understand people's snide, sneaky ways to try and work stuff like that into conversations and make an environment that is only good for you and not good for the whole, if that makes sense. I was going to say, yeah, like, it's... Rurutu says, don't bring up Ubisoft. They had their toxic work environment moment last year. I think they, you know, I honestly, this has started waking some people in Ubisoft up and start banging the door onto Yves Guillemot, like, hey, what the fuck, man? Help us out. Or, you know, you see what's going over on Activision Blizzard. The same stuff could happen here. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah.
It's
go ahead. Sorry.
Man, this is such a hard. I was thinking about how to talk about this. Like,
well, here's the big thing is that if you're coming here and you're listening to the conversation and you're expecting Cameron and Seth to have all the fucking answers, go away, because we're not going to have those answers. But I also think, and Seth, you know this, when I kind of soft rebooting the show, that I don't want us to stray away from this hard conversations. We may not have the answer. We may not have the right answer right now, but the path to the right answer is to talk about it and make it visible. The same issue with this right here. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, I got a couple thoughts. So I'm coming at this from a position of, I am someone who was born and raised in the South, right? This podcast has always had very deep roots in, like, Southern gaming, right? And I will admit that part of my upbringing was the dissemination of foam fingers facts that were not true, right? And fortunately, I had this great thing called college where I was able to learn that, oh, actually, that stuff's not true. And fortunately, I had enough, personally, and this is not like flexing, but this is like, I had enough self-awareness to realize that there are parts about my upbringing and beliefs that I held that were untrue, and in fact, wrong. And that, I think, is what you want to talk about, Cameron. Well, you asked me, like, what can we do to be better? Be prepared to accept the fact that you might be wrong. And not because of any maliciousness on your part. It could simply be lack of vision into that, or optics into that particular part of it. Like, as a white male, I've never had to deal with someone walking in on me breastfeeding. Never will, right? Biologically incapable of it. However, I understand how important that is. I can't empathize, but I can sympathize with how important it is for there to be a damn law on the breastfeeding room, right? That's not important to me unless either someone tells me it's important to me and why, and convinces me of it, which that's maybe a 50-50 chance of whether they actually convince me of it, or I understand that, hey, that's important for somebody to have, right? So the first step to getting better is understanding that the way you do it or the way you think about it might be wrong. And in a lot of cases, probably is wrong, right? I can tell you that a majority of what my parents taught me, being raised, particularly about the way certain types of people are, and the way that certain types of people are going to be predisposed to treat you. And Cameron, you probably have the exact same thing coming from an African-American upbringing, right? And it's probably just a flip coin, all right? It's a toxic as fuck, hundreds of years in the making mindset. And the first step to fixing it, and that is whether it's in your own brain or at Blizzard, is understanding that the way things are might not be right, all right? And then the second step is getting things out in the open. And this is where I think Blizzard's really, like, we now know the state of California has filed official documentation stating things are not right. So there's no longer a question about whether or not things are good or bad at Blizzard. We now know they're wrong. They've got 2 years of evidence that they're getting ready to show about it, right? So when you get called out on this, the second, and I think the more important component to this, is how do you react when you discover that your thing is wrong? And this is where I think Blizzard is really in the first several steps of a long shit staircase of messing up. Because generally speaking, the first thing you want to do when something like this happens is you want to be very transparent about what is going on. And the first thing they did is they had someone who is, I think, probably one of the worst humans on this planet to be in your PR department publishing a statement about it. And that is, what's her face, Townsend? I don't remember her first name.
Frances
Townsend, thank you. Publishing a letter basically saying, all this is fake. We have no idea where this is coming from, and we can't wait to prove them wrong. Boy, let me talk about how bad that looks. Then employees bounce back and say, all right, we're going on a walkout, and here are our demands. These demands are not that big. We just want to know the data about compensation. This is the thing Cameron, I could talk for hours about. The fact that people don't talk about salaries is crazy to me. It boggles my mind when I hear about this being this like taboo subject. And personally, I really wish I could run a company because I would have my rates from janitor to CEO on the wiki for people to look at. You're a designer level one, here's what you make. You're a designer level two, here's what you make.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if you have a dick, it doesn't matter if you have a vagina, it doesn't matter if you have a void. It could be a wormhole.
Yes.
Everyone makes the same. It doesn't matter if you are rainbow. It doesn't matter if you've opted to remove your skin and exist in a gaseous form. Like, that kind of transparency is what I hope we get to one day. So,
that is
when
epic.
You look at this list of demands, they have all these demands, you know, and it's like, better promotion policies. You know, it'd be really interesting. There are decisions made about who do we promote this job to. I'm in the LinkedIn job promotion ad management system, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to focus on certain industries. What industries am I focusing on, right? Am I blocking certain keywords? That kind of data will never get out, but I'd be very interested to know what they are. And so then this is kind of the next bonk of the pong. I just created that phrase.
Bonk of the
pong. And then, so they're like, hey, here are our demands. We'd love to chat with you more about like how we can get these demands taken care of. And then Blizzard hires the law firm that's literally Amazon's like boxing glove filled with cement that is designed for crushing unions. So right now, I think Blizzard is, and Activision as a whole, is on a really tough road. Now, the problem here, Cameron, is as all of these problems, they all face the same trouble.
Okay.
When do people stop caring? When does this story disappear? You said don't bring up Ubisoft. They had their toxic work environment moment last year. Couple departures. What's happened? Do you even know? Has anyone reported on it?
Likely nothing. Until Jason Schreier or somebody says, you know, releases the article, Ubisoft's workplace conditions 1 year later.
And we can't, like, I love Jason Schreier. I love journalists like that. But we cannot let the games industry be policed by a single dude who works at Bloomberg. Like, that's not good. Do you know who's really good at policing employee rights, Cameron? Do you know who's actually hundreds of years of experience policing employee rights? Unions. Unions are really good at it. They're really good at knowing what employees need and want. They're really good at representing that to the business in a way that's actually going to get the business to look at it. And they're really good, this is key, they're really good at being persistent.
And yes, they
for
are.
For years, they'll be persistent about a thing, right? And that's kind of bringing us full circle here is like, I don't, like, this is a cynical way to look at it, but in 3 weeks, this story won't matter. In 3 weeks, we're going to be talking about how excited we are for the next Call of Duty.
And that's a shame.
And it's that means the system is fundamentally broken. So, like, what can we do to be better? Acknowledge that what you believe may be wrong. Be okay with accepting that and trying to maybe figure out a way to fix it, hopefully, if you're a good person. And then be understanding that the fight never stops. It always continues. The minute you discover one false thing about your upbringing, guess what? That opens the door to 1,000 more.
Well, and that's the same thing. Like, the people are pushing this fight right now, but if the new Call of Duty comes out and Activision Blizzard posts, like, record profits, we've never made so much money on Activision Blizzard, then all you're telling those CEOs is just like, well, it sounds like that issues and that stuff, and, you know, we just took a punch to the chin, but we're still standing and we're going to be fine. People are enjoying the new Call of Duty and the new Warzone map so much, they don't even remember what we're getting sued for. And that's a shame.
Like, or worse, they say, yep, we let Jay Allen Bratt go and Call of Duty came out and was our biggest success. Job well done. We fixed it. We fixed all the problems. We let Jay Allen Bratt go. That solved all the problems. Like, no, that didn't solve all the problems. Like, you plucked a hair out of the whole head of hair. Like, it's just, and that's personally, like I said, the rot goes deep. I think the rot goes real deep.
Running sort of short on time, so I don't want to dive too hard into this, but I want to bring this up because I really think a lot of this, we talk about Blizzard, but honestly, a lot of it is from how the gaming industry started, quote unquote, and how, Seth, you remember when we were kids and we were growing up, and we went out and played games and grabbed games. Who were those games targeted to? Be honest. You know, I know, everybody knows. They were targeted to men.
Yeah.
Primarily men. Most of the time they were white males that were jumping in, playing these games. That's why, you know, for all the youngins who don't remember, Seth remembers Booth Babes. Remember those? Back at E3, like E3 2021 and... you got women in half naked and super skimpy bikinis showing off Blinks the Time Sweeper. Because why? Where in Blink's time sweeper, the time sweeping cat, does a scantily clad female show up giving you power-ups? I don't remember seeing it. I didn't play the game, Seth. You might have. I don't remember seeing that in the game.
It's on Game Pass now.
Well, I'm going to have to check it out. I'm going to go play it. Well, I'm going to go check out Blink's the time sweeper and play that and find out for myself. But like,
it's bad.
But it's bad. You talk about the rot. Like, you got to get to the root to clear out the rot. Otherwise, if you take it from the top level, it's just going to grow back. This is, I think, the last, not even just now, not even just this incident, not even just 2021, but the last couple of years, I think, has been with a lot of the changes and new things that we're learning nowadays, is that this is people in the gaming industry that have made it and realized, man, some of the stuff we were doing before was broken. We need to change that. This is them going deep to dig out the rot as best as they can. And the problem is that we just don't have enough people. We just don't have the people that are willing to have those tough conversations or be flexible and be willing to learn about these new things to go in and make those changes. I remember years ago we talked about, like, we had a conversation about females in gaming and things like that. And now apparently it's great that we can have a woman on the cover of a video game that is looks representable, is representative of, I'm use this term loosely here, the modern woman, and is not either half naked in a bikini or sunglasses or with unrealistic proportions or in some type of compromising position or pose. You know what I'm talking about if you're listening or watching. I know Seth
does. I'll say we haven't gone as far as you think we have, because, I mean, Aloy got a little weight on her neck and see how that turned out. So, like, I don't think we're quite as far ahead as you think we are. But
we're not. Yeah, we're not quite there.
The audience has gotten bigger, so therefore that means that, and I do think the games are more accessible than ever, and so that means that more people that appreciate those kinds of decisions and changes are here to buy the thing, right? You said most games were made for white boys because that's the people that bought video games back then, because there was no reason for anyone else to buy them, because it's this chicken egg fallacy, right? They only make games for white men because they were the only people buying it. Therefore, they were the only people who bought it.
I know firsthand for a fact that white guys weren't the only people buying Pokemon and video games. Let me tell you that right now.
But anyone educated knows that. But it, you know, and we have unraveled that over the past two decades. Seth, didn't you play Hello Kitty Island Adventure? I don't know what that is, but I would love to play it. Don't smack talk me. I was playing Lego City Undercover earlier today. All right.
Oh, like, man.
Listen, like, I want gaming to be accessible, right? And that's why at the top of the show I was talking about all the different games, like, you know, I mentioned games like Fortnite, which is generally perceived as being a pretty childish game. I bet you there are people that enjoy it from all age ranges, right? The Sims, which has typically been a very, I guess, female audience-driven approach. The Sims is fun, man. I boot The Sims up and play right now. Is it in my radar right now? Certainly not. I've got other stuff I'm playing. But, like, that's, to me, it's just important to understand gaming is bigger than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And that means there's room for more than one person to succeed. There's room for more than one game to succeed. And that's why, I guess, we'll bring it full circle of, like, people are going to play good games. And people are going to support studios that make the right decisions for their customers and for their employees, right? And I can promise you, Cameron, that this Activision conversation will be on some people's minds when they walk in this October to pick up the big first-person shooter. And you're going to have that, you're going to have Battlefield, and you're going to have Halo sitting next to each other. Which of those three large companies are currently being sued by an actual United States state for being horrible? And I think that's where you start to see an impact. happen, right? Nobody cares until it impacts the dollar, the bottom line. And I'm not saying boycott Blizzard, because that only hurts the people that work there. But do bear this in mind as we see how Activision reacts to this, because that should dictate how you think about these.
Well, Seth, here's what's going to happen. You're going to have that scenario. People are going to walk into the store. They're going to start reaching for the Call of Duty. Like, oh, yeah, new Call of Duty. And then I'm going to come up out of nowhere and slap their hand, and I'm going to be like, what are you doing? Halo Infinite is right here. Oh, also, by the way, you have an Xbox. Halo Infinite is already available via Game Pass. Go home. Go play Halo Infinite. And why not go play the free multiplayer? Bye. Go save your money.
Cameron, we need to get you practiced in this, because you messed it up.
Oh, I did. Okay.
The line is Halo Infinite is now available on Game Pass, which you can get started with for $1 for your first 30 days.
That's why you're here, is to keep me straight.
As little as a dollar.
I want to know that, you know, Seth, you're correct. I made a mistake. I was wrong in that particular scenario, and I have now learned and understood the right, correct way to do that. Thank you so much, yep. Seth. That's what we're talking about right here.
First 30 days, $1. Line it up.
Guys, that is it for episode 44 of the Rocket Punch Show. Talked about before is that, you know, like I said when we end this conversation, we're gonna have some fun conversations on the show. We're going to have some tough conversations on the show. We're not going to have all the answers. If you come in here expecting answers, man, God help you, because we don't have them here. But at a minimum, very minimum, we're going to try and start the conversation and at least throw our opinions into the pool for however much they're worth. The point is that we're throwing them in the pool, and if we get enough people to throw it in the pool, then maybe we can make some waves. Change some opinions, guys. But that's it for episode 44. Thank you guys so much for listening and hanging out with us and all tonight. Remember, of course, we got, you know, hopefully power doesn't go out and I don't have work stuff killing me, that we'll be back next week. We'll talk about whatever the latest and greatest cool stuff and gaming is and have our own fun little conversations here. Seth, anything else you got to add?
One thing, Back for Blood is very good.
Oh, did you play it? Oh, we didn't talk about that.
We didn't talk about it. We talked about more important things, but we can talk about it in the future, because I think the open beta was this weekend, so people probably had a chance to play it.
It is still the closed beta this weekend. I think the open beta is coming up, so that's what I'm waiting on.
That'll be one of a better time to talk about it. So
we'll definitely.
It's real good. They made another Left 4 Dead and updated it with a lot of new progression. So
good. Good.
There you go.
Yes, I'm excited about that. But
the spice must flow. That's three.
Sure, I'll give you that one. That's three.
That one's fake. I failed Dune. I failed on the Dune references. I'm sorry, Dune fans.
You failed. We got too motivated. But guys, thank you so much for listening in. Have a wonderful night. Have a good night and have a good game. We'll talk to you next week.